Christian friends, a question. Of the churches that you know, which would you describe as a success? And why would you describe them as a success? Would you describe Netley Christian Fellowship as a successful church? What is a successful church? Well, please come with me to the readings which we had, 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and 12. Now, Paul is writing to the Corinthians, and in Corinth, success was admired. In Corinth, success was worshipped. It was the age of celebrity. And this mindset had entered the church. And so when certain men turned up on the doorstep claiming to be apostles, and they were dynamic, impressive, sophisticated, savvy, the Corinthians were wowed. They loved these men, their aura of success. Here were men to capture the imagination. And the Corinthians thought to themselves, look, if we hitch up our church to these men, there will be a church that goes places. We'll be as successful as they are. Well, if these men projected an image of dynamism and strength, where did that put the Apostle Paul? Well, Paul compares these men, look, to failure. Chapter 10, verse 10. For some say his letters are weighty and forceful, but in person he is unimpressive and his speaking accounts to nothing. He's not much to look at. He's not much to listen to. Not when compared to these powerful personalities with their compelling teaching. In fact, Paul, compared to these men, he looks like a loser. He doesn't even look like an apostle. All Paul seems to experience is just one difficulty, one trouble after another. He can't even hold it together. So when it comes to the leadership of our church, we're better off with these guys. Because if Paul's an apostle, and it's questionable whether he really is, these men are super apostles. It's a no-brainer. Let's go with them. But the danger to the church is acute. It's not just that they might reject Paul, the man who actually planted the church. It's that they might end up rejecting the Jesus that Paul preached. So if he says in chapter 11, verse 2, I'm jealous for you with a godly jealousy. I promise you to one husband, to Christ, so that I might present you as a pure virgin to him. But I'm afraid that just as Eve was deceived by the serpent's cunning, your minds may somehow be led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. For if someone comes to you and preaches a Jesus other than the Jesus we preached, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it easily enough. You see, Paul's Jesus is the real Jesus. He's the Jesus of the cross. He's the Jesus who calls us not to a successful life, but a crucified life. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. But the Jesus of these super apostles is the same name, but they pack it with a different meaning. Their Jesus, well, he calls us not to a crucified life, but to a successful life. A successful and popular and dynamic as these super apostles. Their Jesus can beat the pagans at their own game. Their Jesus is a winner. He has the X factor. He'll go down a storm in Corinth. As Paul says, it's another Jesus, a different spirit, a different gospel. So how does Paul deal with the challenge of these men? Particularly when compared to these men, he looks a loser. Well, these men, they love to boast. They love to project in a sort of aura of success. Something of a swagger about them. Christian celebrities. We're the greatest. Okay, says Paul. They boast about their success. Then that forces me too to boast. If they're not afraid to talk up their achievements, Paul says it's against my better judgment. Well, I'm going to talk about my achievements. I'm going to boast about the things that I've been doing. Talk about success, successful ministry. I'm going to tell you about what the secret of real success is, says the apostle. So please have that passage open in front of you. And what we'll do is just simply go through what Paul says. Then afterwards, we'll draw the lessons. Okay. Christian friends, have we got the X factor? Damien Park, a successful church. Bentley Christian Fellowship, a successful church. What's the secret of success? Let's listen to Paul's boasting. And the start is very promising, isn't it? Look at verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they Abraham's descendants? So am I. So the Romans, says Paul, we're neck and neck. They boast about their Jewish pedigree. Well, I'm certainly their equal. Verse 23. Are they servants of Christ? Oh, I must be mad talking like this, says Paul. I can go one better. Now he's got the Corinthians' attention. You see them craning their necks. Oh, Paul can go one better than the super apostles. What's he going to say? Miraculous victories? Adoring crowds? Power ministries? Invincible strength? Has he been keeping something a secret? Actually, he's been fated by the great and the good. What's he going to say? Verse 23, are they servants of Christ? I have worked much harder. I can go one better. I've worked harder. No one's worked as hard or as fruitfully as me. We say, well, come on, Paul, tell us what else you've done. Tell us about your triumphs. They're servants of Christ, I am more. I have worked much harder, been imprisoned more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. Now you see the Corinthians turning to each other. And asking, what sort of boasting is this? This is for what I preached. There were no adoring crowds. I didn't conquer my hearers by the sheer power of my eloquence. When I preached, they gave me a good whipping. They threw me into prison more times than I can remember. Verse 23, I've been exposed to death again and again. I've been in fear of my life. Verse 24, 5 times the Jews gave me a thrashing. 3 times I was beaten with rods. And once I stood up to preach, the adoring crowd, they picked up stones to stone me. Gideon Ousley, who's a Methodist preacher in Ireland, he was massively used by God. When he came to a town to preach, he would try to preach with his back to a shop window. Do you think why? Well, that way the crowds are less likely to pick up stones to stone him. I remember about 30 or so years ago, I stayed at the house. It was a church mission of a little old lady. And she'd been a missionary in Colombia with her husband. And she told me that her husband used to preach in the open air. And before you preach, they used to look at the ground beforehand. And if there were lots of nice, round stones, he used to say with a certain degree of irony, this is a good place to preach. Because more often than not, when he stood up to preach the gospel, the people of the village used to pick up these nice round stones and stone them. The authentic servants of Christ, what Paul is telling us, are so often hated, despised, rejected. Oh, so the Corinthians, okay, Paul, you've had some difficult times. As you travel from place to place, wasn't the Lord with you in a special way? Didn't he send his angel before you? Prepare the way to roll out the red carpet. Well, says Paul, it wasn't quite like that. Verse 25. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. This is Paul. Sometimes I turn up late for meetings. You ever turn up late for meetings? Says Paul, I was unavoidably delayed. I've been shipwrecked. My plans time and time again, says the apostle, came undone. And since I've been serving the Lord, I've never, ever felt safe. The number of times I've escaped by the skin of my teeth, verse 26. I've been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from the Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false brothers. The bandits don't get me, the Jews get me. If they don't get me, the Gentiles get me. I'm not safe anywhere. I'm not safe at sea, in the city, in the wilderness. And if I survive all of that, and I slump down exhausted, and I feel I can't take any more, then says Paul, somebody stabs me in the back, in danger from false brothers. So Christian friends, has Paul got the X factor? Do you think he can compete on equal terms with these super apostles? Can he go one better? What sort of boasting is this? But you see, this is authentic Christianity. Also, the Corinthians, but Paul, didn't God sort of give you superhuman strength to face down these impossible odds? Well, no. Verse 27, I have labored and toiled and often gone without sleep. Sometimes, says the apostle, I didn't always enjoy the support of the churches. So I had to work hard with my hands. You think of it. The great apostle Paul taking a badly paid, a menial job so he could make ends meet. A job that often left him worn out. I think God can use exhausted people. Labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I've been cold and naked. There are times when Paul would turn up on your doorstep and you'd be cold, hungry, threadbare, exhausted. To all appearances, you'd look a failure. Very opposite of an image of dynamism and strength. And as if that wasn't enough, says Paul, what really stresses me out is the churches. Verse 28, besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. I'm constantly on edge, waiting for news. Robbed of my peace, I'm fretting over the churches. At times, as Paul, it's unbearable. Especially when, verse 29, God's people are made to stumble. I seem mad. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. A pastor wrote to Thomas Boston, and he complained. He said, I only have 28 people in my church. Boston wrote back and said, I think you'll find it's quite enough to account for their judgment. Most pastors I know are on the edge. Look at their people. Some aren't going on. Some aren't listening. Some of them are complaining. Some are wandering off. Some are rather dazzled by something. Some think there's more pleasure to be found in sin than the pleasures of God. Some don't turn up. Sometimes it's just a look on their face. It's a Sunday night. They're just going out the door. There's that look. You think, oh no. Eats you up. Stomach churns over. Well, that's just one church. Paul says, all the churches. Well, by now the Corinthians are looking at each other and they're wondering, you know, we know what boasting is, but what sort of boasting is this? It doesn't even begin to compare to these superhuman achievements of these super apostles. Exactly, says Paul, verse 30. If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. Let them talk about their success. But when you're writing my CV, you're to call attention to my weaknesses. Because they are the marks of a true servant of Jesus Christ. Throw one more thing, says Paul, verse 31. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, who is to be praised forever, knows I'm not lying, so I'm going to tell you something now. In Damascus, the governor under King Aretas had the city of the Damascenes guarded in order to arrest me. There I was, shut up in the city, unable to get out. Garrison waiting to arrest me. Again, the Corinthians thinking, oh, now what are you going to say, Paul? How were you rescued? Did God send an angel? Did you blind the garrison with a display of power? Maybe like some Samson, you broke down the doors. Maybe it was just with a word of command. But says Paul, verse 33, I was lowered in a basket from a window in the wall and slipped through his hands. Paul, the great superhero, there he is, crouching inside a basket, lowered from a window in the wall. As soon as the basket hits the ground, the lid comes off, and he legs it into the night. Do you see? What are the true marks of an apostle? Weakness. What is the evidence that God is at work in a person's life, is at work in a church? Weakness. What is the true secret of success? Weakness. Let's read on. Chapter 12, verse 1. I must go on boasting. Although there's nothing to be gained, I don't know what I'm doing this for. I will go on to visions and revelations from the Lord. Now, these super apostles, they boasted about their experiences of God. Wonderful, transforming, heavenly experiences. And you can imagine, can't you? There's a meeting, in come the super apostles. Oh, I had a vision from God this week. Can you imagine that? Someone comes in, I've been to heaven, I've seen things, and I want to tell you about what God showed me this week. Imagine there's grins on the edge of their seats. They're saying, tell me more. So Paul, I'm going to boast about my experiences. Now I'm talking about me. I'm going to put a distance between the Paul who had the revelation and the Paul you know today. So that when I say, says Paul, I know a man, it's really me. I'm talking about me. But let's keep it like that in case it sounds like I'm drawing attention to myself. Here's the great apostle Paul caught up to heaven. Wow. I don't want you to think of me as someone special. I want you to take me, verse 6, for who I really am. So what happened to Paul? What was his heavenly experience? Well, he tells us, verse 2. A man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven, whether it was in the body or out of the body, I don't know, God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, was caught up to paradise. Then, says Paul, he heard. And you can feel the Corinthians saying, yes, yes, what did you hear, Paul? Tell us what you heard. You've been to heaven. You've heard things. Heavenly words. What was it? You've got to tell us. He heard inexpressible things that man is not permitted to tell. What? All you've been to heaven? You've heard, what was it? Voice of God, was it? Was it the voice of angels? You've been in the heavenly courts. You've heard them speaking in heaven. Can't even talk about it. No. Verse 5, I don't mind boasting about the Paul of 14 years ago. The only thing I want to draw your attention to today is my weakness. I don't want you thinking of me as some sort of spiritual superman. Well, all right, Paul, you can't talk about your experience, but what did your experience do for you? Were you transformed by this heavenly experience? Did it catapult you into new heights of spirituality? Did it make you victorious in the Christian life? Did it give you the X factor? Well, says Paul, it was certainly a transforming experience. I've never been the same since. Verse 7. To keep me from becoming conceited, because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given to me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Since that day, I have known nothing but weakness, heartaches, and satanic assaults. I may have been lifted up to heaven, but I've come crashing down to earth. And heavenly experiences have been replaced with satanic beatings. And far from irresistible victories, since that day I've been in the thick of the warfare. A thorn in the flesh. Messenger of Satan. Have you had a thorn in the flesh? Did you hop, skip and jump? It reduced you to a painful limp, didn't it? Well, a thorn in the flesh does. It limits your room for action. You can't do what you once did. And far from feeling strong, what does it do? It leaves you feeling fragile. Says Paul, these heavenly experiences, far from leaving me strong, or followed on, left me feeling fragile. And the thorn was so painful, it was satanic. Now, what was it? We don't know, do we? But some have suggested the Canaanites are described as a thorn in the flesh of the Israelites. So maybe it was a Canaanite. Not a something, but a someone. Someone doing Satan's work. A someone making Paul's life a misery. Verse 7, to keep me from becoming conceited. Says in the New King James, lest I be exalted above measure. Thorn in the flesh. And I have never felt so weak. Spiritual experience has catapulted me to a new experience of weakness. Christian friend, do you know that feeling? It's not a something. We can bear some things, can't we? But a someone. Someone who dogs your steps. Someone who makes your life a misery. Someone who robs you of your sleep. But when you sleep well, you wake up in the morning and you think, well, there's something on my mind, something that's making me miserable at the moment. What is it? And then you're like, yeah, you remember. A someone. Robbed of your peace. Can't concentrate. When the phone goes or you check your inbox or that letter comes through the door, you're immediately on edge. Maybe when you know it's from them, you feel sick in your stomach. Just what Paul felt. Yeah, but Paul, didn't you pray about it? Well, I did pray about it, verse 8. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it from me. The Lord heard you and granted you your prayer, and you knew some victory over these things? No, not really. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. When I prayed that God would take this something, or more likely this someone, from me, God's reply was, Paul, you're more useful to me, troubled, pained, and weak. You're more useful to me, a broken Paul. Why? Because then you'll keep coming back to me. Keep coming back to me for grace. Then you'll keep depending upon me for help. Then you'll keep looking to me for strength. And then you see, Paul, whatever success is found in your ministry, it won't be down to you. It won't be your doing. It won't be traced back to the great apostle. It'll be my doing. And every blessing, every success, every triumph, won't be Paul's doing. Traced back to the God who Paul serves. He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. When it says that my power is made perfect in weakness, it doesn't mean that somehow God sort of gives him a sort of Lucozade bottle and suddenly the power returns and he feels strong and can do it. So a sudden burst of dynamism, a blinding glory. It simply means that Paul felt weak and drained and weary And whatever the task that God had put before him was beyond his reach. And yet somehow, God's strength was at work in that weakness. So sometimes he stood up to preach and felt, I cannot preach another word. He looked at the crowds in front of him and felt terrified. He'd hardly had any sleep when he went to a church that had been causing him difficulty. And there were people there out to get him. But when he stopped to preach, he preached some of his most powerful messages when he was a man at his wit's end. Therefore, he says, verse 9, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So did you hear that? One of the most fundamental lessons any church needs to hear. It's one of the most fundamental lessons any of us as Christians need to hear. Did you hear it? What's the secret of Paul's success? One word, isn't it? It's weakness. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And for Paul, it was the strength to preach and thousands converted. The strength to plant churches across the Gentile world. The strength to unite believing Jews and Gentiles together as one. The strength to stand before kings and emperors. This small, weak, vulnerable man who in his own words, verse 11, is nothing. You look at him. Oh, he writes impressive letters. But when he actually turns up, you're Paul? I can't believe it. This little bandy-legged man. You? But you're nothing. I didn't even notice you were there. I couldn't even see you. And we know then, don't we, that the success isn't down to Paul. When he looked to Christ in all his need, for the power of Christ was upon him. And then when things happened, there's only one answer, only one explanation. It's Christ who's done it. And that way God gets all the glory. And now you know. What makes a successful church? What makes a successful work in the church? You involved in a work in the church? What's going to make it successful? It's evangelism, work with the children, visiting people. What's the secret of success? What do you need? Do you need strong, dynamic leadership? Is it giftedness, flair, money, numbers? Do you need fantastic buildings, state-of-the-art interiors? Do you need celebrity endorsements? What is it you need? Is that the X factor that we're looking for? If it is, we don't need the Lord, do we? Why do we need the Lord if we've got all those things? Do it ourselves. What makes a successful church? It's weakness. It's brokenness. And all its manifestations. Because, Christian friends, when we're little in our own eyes and we go to Jesus Christ, then his power rests upon us. Whatever success is achieved, it's all his doing. It's all of you. You want to change the world? Or would you send for uneducated fishermen from Galilee? Would you? James and John, Peter and Andrew, men like that? Do you need a mother for the Messiah? Would you pick on an unmarried teenager whose life has been dull and hard? Do you want to confound the Bible experts of Jerusalem? Or would you push to the front a recent convert who's been blind from birth? And we could go on and on and on, couldn't we? So many examples. Christian friends, it's weakness. Because then the power of Jesus Christ rests upon me. And all the world can see it's not your doing, because you're nothing. This is supernatural. This is God's doing. Success comes through weakness. Broken people, broken churches. When I am weak, then I am strong. Look at our heroes, don't we? Luther, depressed. Calvin, he was a refugee who was hedged in on every side by pressures, trouble, conflict. At home, all his children died in infancy. He suffered migraines, pleurisy, gout, hemorrhoids, kidney stones. I'll keep you awake at night, but he passed one kidney stone that was the size of a hazelnut. And was he some sort of machine? The broken man. Broken man upon whom the power of Christ rested. John Wesley's marriage was a disaster. Charles Spurgeon spent the last 20 years of his ministry, for a third of the time he was out of the pulpit with illness. Weakness, isn't it? Weakness, weakness, weakness. Nothing but weakness. But what did these things do? It kept these men small. It kept them dependent. So when the blessing came, it was God's doing, not theirs. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So have you got the message? Success comes through brokenness. Successful churches are full of broken people, full of weakness. Weak, needy, dependent, vulnerable Christians. Written on the CV of every authentic Christian worker is weakness, insults, hardships, persecutions, difficulties. When I am weak, then I am strong. Time to wrap things up. So, brothers and sisters, what of you? What's on your CV? Are you troubled this evening? Are you vulnerable? Are you weary? Are you feeling old? You feel all your usefulness is behind you. You've been sort of put in the waiting room. These are your last days. Are you distressed? Are you sick? Are you in constant pain? Are you in needs? You have to depend on other people all the time. Are you broken? Do you wonder, I don't know if I can keep going. I don't know how I got through last week, really. And I have no idea how I'm going to get through next week. I haven't got the strength I used to possess. And maybe on top of all of this, there's a messenger of Satan that's making your life a misery. And it's not a something. You could live with a something. It's a someone, and they won't go away. And they dog your steps. And they're always with you. And there's no escape, no release. And you pray to God about it, and he hasn't taken it away, and it just goes on and on and on. Maybe you've come here this evening, you feel that you're at the end of yourself. You feel broken. And God used a broken person. God used broken churches. Recognize you're letting no one down. Least of all the Lord. And recognize that God is at work. And recognize you're the person that Christ uses. So keep going. One of God's great mercies to us is that he boxes us in. Sometimes we say, well, I've just got to get on with it. And things don't change. And it's a great kindness of God. He boxes us in. I've got nowhere to go. I've got nothing else I can do. I've just got to keep on plodding, plodding, plodding. The great kindness of God, you know, to box you in and not give you an exit, not allow you to go away or do anything else. Great kindness of God. We might ruin ourselves. But pray. Say, Lord, here I am. Use me. I can't do it. I'm nothing. I can't even give a cup of cold water in Christ's name as I ought to. And maybe you feel, well, I'm old. I can't do what I once did. Well, Matthew Henry said, pray, your last works will be your greatest works. Who knows what God has called you to do? Power of the prayer of someone who can wrestle with the angel of God. I can't do what I used to do, but oh Lord, I believe you told me here, your grace is sufficient. And your strength is made perfect in my weakness. So Lord, come, help me. May the power of Christ rest upon me. And when the blessing comes, and God may hide the blessing from you. I've got people at Amien Park who've gone to glory now. But the blessings that we have, they have won. They've laid foundations, they've prayed prayers, they've labored, and have kept plodding on, and the blessings that we have are because of them. God may hide it from you. You may not live to see it. But when the blessing comes, it's clear it wasn't your doing. It was His doing. That way He gets all the glory. You've had a new jumper, and then it catches a thread, doesn't it? And it sort of unravels, yeah? And it spoils the jumper. Well, don't be surprised when God snags our new jumpers. You know, things appear to go wrong. Anything gone wrong recently? Had it all set out, all planned out, and it's all gone wrong. A plan comes undone. It didn't turn out the way I hoped it would turn out. But who's done it? God's done it. Just in case we begin to think that when the blessing comes, it's because of my new jumper. Something I've done. But it's not my doing. It's never my doing. That's why God unravels things. To keep me dependent. To keep me broken. To keep me small. To keep me looking to Him. And that way He will have all the glory. What's the secret of our success? What's the X factor? It's weak, fragile, broken people who know that they're weak. And say like Paul, I am nothing. But men and women who are in love with Jesus Christ. Men and women who rejoice in Christ crucified. And when you look at the cross, did you ever see such weakness? A broken, bleeding body. But what was it? It was the triumph of the ages. Men and women who follow a crucified Lord, who in all their weakness go in dependence upon Him. For when I am weak, then I am strong.